do want to thank you all for inviting me to present at this session, and thank you for the section, for the opportunity to talk. I will be very Colorado-centric about this part of the presentation because, as a state dental director, I think we're in a unique position to figure out how this all is going to impact us. And I will tell you, I don't have any personal disclosures, well, personal or commercial personal disclosures, unless Deborah has something to say. So I want to talk a little bit in the context of how the provisions in affordable care will be affecting state oral health programs, and specifically Colorado's oral health program. And I'm going to talk about four different areas. You will see some overlap from Jack's presentation and my presentation, and probably even Dr. Aloukian's presentation. But again, I wanted to put that disclaimer out that it is from my perspective as a state dental director. We need to talk about benefits and coverage. We need to talk about disease prevention and literacy, safety net expansions, and workforce development. And I will put the seed out there that these are the areas that explicitly talk about oral health within healthcare reform, but I think if you're very creative, you can look at some other areas in which to include oral health, such as the patient navigator systems, the home visitor programs, and I'm not going to talk a lot about that, but we are fortunate within the state of Colorado that the nurse home visitor program was founded here with Dr. David Oles, and we have an inroad very clearly with that and how we can adapt that model to include oral health officially within the model. So keep your mind open about those kinds of things. Colorado was a little bit ahead of the game with the federal health care reform in that in 2007, the governor appointed a Blue Ribbon Commission to study a Colorado health care affordability proposal. And from that, in 2009, the legislature actually passed the Colorado Health Care Affordability Act. What this did, and I talked a little bit, alluded to it previously, is it increased and provided a hospital provider fee service, a provider fee, that increased the eligibility of CHIP children to 250% of the federal poverty level, and that went was implemented in 2010, and also included 12 months continuous eligibility for Medicaid children, and that begins in 2012. So we're a little bit ahead of the curve from the National Affordable Care Act in that Colorado was already thinking about these things and had started commissions on this. So in Jack's comment to the exchanges, we already have a commission that's talking about the exchanges and how they're going to be implemented in Colorado. They have been in place for a year and a half, so we're at a little bit of an advantage maybe to some other states. Whoops, go back one. We have had very restrictive Medicaid eligibility. We still had an asset test in Colorado for Medicaid eligibility. And we have continually fought what that means for our children. And so I think some of the advantages for our own Affordable Care Act have been great in that we've eliminated some of these barriers to the care that already exist. We have no adult Medicaid benefit. We do have emergent care, but it's very restrictive to concurrent medical conditions and medically necessary. The first Medicaid rate increase that we had in 10 years occurred in 2008 to increase Medicaid reimbursement to 52% of the ADA mean. Then what happened? Well, we had a recession, and provider fees were cut across the board, and we are now down below 50% once again. We didn't lose it all because we had a very sophisticated coalition that approached the Healthcare Policy and Finance Department and said, don't do an across-the-board provider cut, but let's talk a little bit about what services we could reduce, what could require pre-authorizations and those kinds of things so that we didn't lose this gain and the credibility within the dental community that it took for us to get this gain. We have a fairly robust safety network in the state of Colorado, and we've had unsupervised dental hygiene practice since 1983. We've been very lucky in Colorado with our federal grant applications. The Oral Health Unit has received a Centers for Disease Control cooperative agreement, the first ones that came out in the early 2000s, and again were reauthorized in 2008. So we've had a lot of capacity development that has occurred, and we've been able to maintain that. We have workforce grant this year and previously, so we've been able to do a lot with our dental loan repayment and those kinds of things. And within our department, we are actually physically co-located with our primary care office, which will become very important when we talk about workforce models, National Health Service core loan repayment, and those kinds of things, because we have a very good working relationship with that organization. We work well with our Medicaid agency, which can be contentious in some states, but we are not within the same agency. And I, as dental director, don't have anything to do with the policy work that comes out of the Medicaid agency. So while we are two separate and distinct departments, we have established over the last several years a very good relationship and communication directly with our counterparts in Medicaid. So it's a great thing for our department. The Colorado Dental Association and the State Oral Health Unit get along very well. And I happen to be located with our maternal and child health program within the health department, so we have a great relationship with organizations such as school-based health, and we actually sit within the chronic disease program, so we have great communication with those individuals. I said we have an active oral health coalition that came as a result of the cooperative agreement from CDC, and we're lucky that we are the only regional dental school in Colorado. We have the University of Colorado School of Dental Medicine. So we have a lot of advantages maybe to our state that maybe you don't have. But these are all the things that we need to take into account when we're thinking about the impacts of affordable care. What does this mean as I look at healthcare reform? And you're going to have to take this back and think about how these things apply in your state. So I just wanted to tease you a little bit and get you thinking about some of this stuff. Dental benefits and coverage. Well, the essential benefits section, and you can go read the millions of pages of the Affordable Care Act, or you can just listen to Jack because he's very clear about this, requires a dental benefit coverage as part of any essential benefits package for children under age 21. We've already gone that direction with our own affordable care. But what this does is it elevates the benefit of oral health care to children to a higher level. It's going to be mandated. It's great. 2014 is when it's supposed to be mandated. There's no appropriation for it at this point. But what we stand to gain from this is a great deal. And then standalone dental plans have to offer dental benefits as part of a health insurance exchange or a subcontract. So it's very important for me to either be involved directly or have someone that's involved within our state commission that's developing that exchange so that we understand the impact that it's going to have in oral health care. We are already reaching this because of our hospital provider fee. 133% of the federal poverty level are those children that are Medicaid eligible. Jack talked a little bit about MACPAC. I think this will be very, very important for our state oral health program because, as I said, while we gained a Medicaid reimbursement rate increase, we lost a little of it and we're still below the ADA mean for the Rocky Mountain region. And if you've attended any of the Colorado-centric presentations this week, you've seen that Medicaid reimbursement continues to be an issue with providers accepting Medicaid. Somebody said this morning 10% of dentists in the state of Colorado accept Medicaid. That's higher than my estimation. We have 18 counties that don't have a Medicaid provider out of 64. We have 8 counties that don't have a dentist. So you can see the challenges we're facing. Somebody brought up yesterday as well, so you're gonna get coverage for all these kids, but who's gonna treat them? So that ties very closely in with workforce, which we'll talk about in just a second. I think one of the interesting caveats to the Affordable Care is that Medicare Advantage will be able to use the rebates to pay for dental and other services. So while there will not be a dental benefit in Medicare, nor will there ever be, as you said, yay, dentistry, there will be some eligibility and some availability for these Medicare recipients to access through the exchanges and other things a way to get standalone dental benefits. Are they going to? I don't know. What does the increase in coverage mean for our state of Colorado? I cannot take credit for this data. It came from the Colorado Health Institute, which is a nonpartisan think tank that does a lot of data analysis and policy work within our community. They estimated, and these are 2009 numbers, that 176 children are currently uninsured from dental insurance, or from medical insurance in the state. 57% from our own hospital provider fee will become insured. 54 through Medicaid and CHIP, 21,000 from the exchanges, and 23 through employer-based insurance. So let me restate the first bullet. 57% will become insured from those three things, which is the hospital provider fee and affordable care. The remaining are either undocumented, and I did check on this, Scott, undocumented, or they will choose not to participate and pay the fine. So, but that's a significant increase in coverage. So I want to look a little bit about our timelines. May 2010, our provider fee went into effect. We already increased the eligibility for Medicaid and CHIP. The MACPAC Commission was instituted in 2010. Medicare Advantage rebates will go into effect in 2012. And Medicaid expansions and exchanges, which mandate oral health coverage for children, go into effect by 2014, if there's funding appropriated. So what about disease prevention? We are very lucky that Colorado has a very robust school-based health program. And wonderfully, the healthcare reform does include oral health as services that can be provided in school-based health settings. An FOA was released on October 4th, and it's come and gone, and there have been a lot of edits in it, but finally, October 4th, the final one was issued, and this is for capital investment. So building clinics, purchasing equipment, all of those kinds of things. The challenge is the eligible applicants must be providers of school-based health services. So I, as a state, can't apply for this funding, but a school-based health center could apply for this funding. So you will understand why it's very important for me to have the relationship with our school-based health center groups so that we can let them know if they're interested in starting or expanding existing oral health programs within school-based health centers, they should be applying for this grant. I don't have money to pay for mobile dental units. I don't have money to pay for the building of a facility. But this specific school-based health center grant would allow them to do that. Now, oral health is not the only thing that's included in there, so it has to be a high enough priority that they choose to do it, but it is an opportunity for us to look at, and something that we have certainly talked about. Disease prevention for school-based dental sealant programs specifically. There shall be awards for each of the 50 states and the territories and Indian tribes for expanding or establishing school-based sealant programs. Currently, 33% of our schools that are eligible for school sealant programs receive school sealant programs in our state. That's based on funding that we receive from several different federal organizations. Wouldn't it be great if every state in this country and every territory was able to provide a school-based sealant program? Challenge. We allow independent hygienists to do that. Who's going to do it in those other 50 states? And then, of course, the dental caries disease management demonstration grants. This is about Bright Futures. And while we use that model within our early childhood settings, it's not something that we have a very robust program around, but it's something for you to consider, because if appropriations are made, it will be out there for you to be able to apply for. Do you have, like, time things? We are very lucky to have been one of the CDC cooperative agreement states. This time around, 19 states out of 50 have received them. So what's going on with all of the other states? Well, hopefully, eventually, should the appropriation come across, every state would be eligible to apply and receive some funding. We would assume that the benefit to our specific program, which has been levelly funded for the last 3 years, is that we would see increases that could truly support the capacity and infrastructure that we've developed over the last 8 years. Some states have oral health programs that are very, very robust. Some states have a single-person shop. And so these cooperative agreements would allow them to build those essential personnel positions to allow them to expand their oral health programming for school-based oral health services, for community water fluoridation, for a surveillance system, should the appropriations be made. We're very excited that there was a provision for increasing not only the national oral health surveillance system, but also participation for states to develop their own surveillance systems for oral health. And as Jack said, we have a paucity of data for oral health. Unless you have a very aggressive organization within your state that's going about and collecting this information. So the establishment of local and state oral health surveillance systems is imperative to build anything else that you want to do on oral health. I put PRAMS in here because there is a specific provision about the National Oral Health Surveillance System mandating that there be oral health questions on the PRAMS for every single state. Not every state participates in PRAMS, but this would allow them to be able to do that and to include oral health questions. I hope you all were able to attend the oral health literacy presentations yesterday. It was very fascinating. But there is a national education campaign within Affordable Care to increase oral health literacy. It would be developed through the Centers for Disease Control, and it would target specific oral conditions and populations. So what do we mean besides early childhood caries, which we talked about this morning? It would be diabetics, it would be elderly adults, and I think that very clearly they demonstrated yesterday that with an increase in oral health literacy, we should be able to see an increase in oral health. So the fact that functionally a large percentage of our population has very low oral health literacy, this should be a tremendous asset and really provide the framework for any of the work that we need to do. Somebody talked about earlier in the week, and they're all running together now, about why more families don't accept sealants and fluoride. Well, I tell you, the number one reason that we hear from our providers is because parents don't understand what they are, what the purpose of them is, how we go about doing it. So if we could increase their understanding of the benefits of these things and what they technically mean, we would be more successful and get more than a 50% consent rate in our school-based sealant programs. Dental workforce. We talked briefly about alternative dental health care provider demonstration projects. For our state, what this would mean is building on independent dental hygiene practice and the very liberal scope of practice that we have within the state of Colorado. A dentist does not need to supervise, but very limited services within the state of Colorado. A hygienist is allowed to go and start their own dental hygiene practice without the direct supervision of a dentist. And we've had very successful increases to the liberality of the scope of practice. So 2 years ago, they passed the dental hygiene process of care in which dental hygienists can now expose radiographs without a prior prescription from a dentist. They are required to read those and refer out to the dental providers if they find disease that is outside of their scope of practice. So it really enables those providers to say the C word, we can now say cavity, where we couldn't before, and emphasize to the families the importance of this is not a dental exam, we have to be very careful, but to let them know that there are things that we cannot deal with as a dental hygiene practitioner. You need to go see a dentist. The advantages to these kinds of models of care is that the provider that's most appropriately trained to do things is then allowed to do them. So it's not the surgeon, the dentist, doing all of the care and costing the system as much as it does to do that. Of course, with the National Health Service Corps and our own dental loan repayment, we expect to see increases matches with our financial assistance for loan repayments. So because we have a relationship with our primary care office, we have a Colorado Health Service Corps loan repayment program, they can match greater funds through that than we can with our small program. So we're able to draw down additional federal dollars with the National Health Service Corps loan repayments and qualify more dental providers. And they recognize that dental providers are primary care providers to get more loan assistance for those people who are willing to serve in underserved areas. And I'm very excited to say, with the halftime provision, that was one of our challenges. A lot of providers don't work full time. 4 days a week is not full time for the Health Service Corps. So to say that you have to work 40 hours a week in direct patient care is very challenging for oral health care providers. So it'll be great to see that come through. And then, of course, Jack talked about dental school training programs, which we really want to keep an eye on because we are the regional dental school within the state. So what do I have to say in parting? Because nothing's been appropriated, and because we don't know what's going to happen, although that was very illustrative about what you talked about, we need to wait and see. Because I can have a plan in my drawer and pull it out when grants come available. But until all of these funds are appropriated, there's not really anything else that I can do except prepare. So I would expect for you to take this message back to your state and think about the conversation that we've started here today, how can you prepare should those appropriations come across? How can you be prepared to take the greatest advantage to affordable care as a state oral health program?